tell us the process of where you are right now with your staff, I guess a little over 48 hours away from the draft beginning?
Yeah, I mean, we're in a pretty good spot. We've done some mocks. We've gone back through some positions that, you know, you kind of have your scouting view. You listen to the coaches, the ones where you're in the same, you see it the same, you can kind of move on. We're working through a couple of those still, like, you know, how you view this person in our offense or in our defense, and, you know, what's the role, making sure we're on the same page. Maybe we graded the player and we're thinking this guy maybe doesn't start year two, does this year one, and you're just trying to get on the same page of some of those things, because that kind of helps you assign the value of where you would take the player. You know, are you taking them as a role player this year and a future starter? Are you taking them hopefully to start year one? Or I don't know if I ever see this guy as a starter, but he's going to be a heck of a backup. So we're just kind of ironing out some of those, making sure we see, you know, is you're never going to fully agree, but just trying to get where there is complete consensus, those are easy. Where there's not, just trying to get to common ground. What do we pick? 30, not 30.
Is that is it over the last couple of years about the same range?
Or is it less this year? Yeah, I mean, it's probably in the ballpark. Yeah.
What's your update, if any, on James
Cook? The same with James. Really, since owners' meeting, since we spoke, love James. Look forward to James putting on our helmet again this year and doing well for us. And I know he plans that. James is a competitive dude. And, you know, look forward to that. That's really probably where we're at, Tim.
Is he here?
Like, it's off-season program? Not this week, but, yeah. I can't tell you when he's definitely coming or not, but, yeah, not yet. I mean, it's voluntary. So guys come and go. Guys have things going on. Try not to look too far into it. We could all assume he's not here because he's unhappy with his contract or whatever, but that's not fair. Like, he hasn't told me that. I don't know. No one's told me that he said that. But so I think that's kind of unfair to say he's not here because of that. Doesn't mean he's not here next week or – the week after. He'll be ready to go, though.
What is the luxury of having two picks in the second round?
Yeah, Mookie, I love that. You know, that's value. That's an asset for us. I think it's a good year to have a couple of those. I think there's value, you know, where we're picking. Of course, you always want the highest picks, but how you set your board and things like that. So, no, we're very excited to have, obviously, our original pick plus the one we added with the Steph move last year.
Brandon, what's
that? Oh, go ahead. Thanks. You're scheduled to make 10 picks. How likely, in your mind, is it that 10 drafted rookies could make the 53-man roster?
Yeah, that's a good question. Tell me who my players are, and I'll tell you. But, I mean, odds would say that's probably hard to have a class of 10. I mean, we are only generally given 7, and that's probably sometimes years 7 can be hard, right, to make it. But we'll see. You know, I think that's where we have to be smart with how the board's falling. You know, I wouldn't want to go in and say, hey, let's cash these picks in right away and move up 3 spots and – you know, let's cash this 5th round in and move up 2 spots in the 2nd round or whatever that gets you when we really don't need to. And then we're sitting there later going, man, I can't believe this guy's still there. And so I think that's where it's very important, Jay, that you set a board where you, as we were talking earlier about the right value of the player, you never want to turn a pick in and go, this guy's got no shot to make your roster. So I think if we start trending towards there, that's where we either start trying to move up or trade something for a next year's pick.
Brandon, it feels like it wasn't that long ago that a transfer was an exception. Now it's team players that are on multiple schools.
Mm-hmm.
Does that impact the way you weigh production against trades? The only reason I say is, you know, sometimes a guy goes to a new system, it's only 1 year, maybe his numbers are down. Has that impacted you at all, knowing that he's in a different place and you project him differently because it wasn't a more of a linear way that he played at the same school?
I think it's definitely more challenging, to your point, Mike, in a lot of ways. You know, you can have a young man that's been at three schools, so you're trying to talk to people at his original school, at school two, and at school three. And school A loved him but didn't have a great fit for him. School B thought he was better than he is, thought he was entitled, couldn't wait to get rid of him. And then school C loves him. So you're trying to put all the pieces together. Are they mad that he left, or was that the truth of the player? And that's the character, the DNA. You know, it used to be a lot easier. You got a player at, you know, University of Buffalo, you just go over there and you talk to trainers, the coaches, the staff, and you get kind of a consensus of what the DNA, how this person operates, and then you grade the player. This one, when these guys are transferring two and three times, it's harder to get the clear pictures because sometimes there's sour grapes on one side or another, so we're trying to put that together. And then to your point about production, you're always looking at, like, level of comp. Was it a totally new system? How they were used? You know, we're in a projection business, and sometimes we are projecting them to play in a different way. Hey, we believe he will do well the way we would use him, but maybe we've rarely seen that, just the way he's been used in college, or maybe he was rarely used. I mean, sometimes there's guys, I mean, Taron Johnson played outside. How does that translate to nickel? We put a lot on our nickel to come fill the B gap and tackle. That's a translation. You know what I mean? If you don't see players do that. So there's a lot of scenarios where we're up there talking and we're debating, like, yes, I see him do this. Yes, I see his athletic traits. Yes, I like his DNA. But we're talking about playing him different in our system. And so you're kind of measuring and weighing risk and of where that is, especially if you haven't seen him do it.
Hey, Brandon, this is a draft that, reportedly, there's fewer first-round grades probably in this draft. Does that, at number 30, does that complicate things for you if you want to up or primarily trade back? Is that complicated, having lesser, fewer first-round grade guys?
Yeah, I don't know. There's always talk, and your board, you might have, I'm making up a number, let's just say half, you might have 16, and another team might have 18, and another one may have 13. And so everyone has their value. We play in a 4-3 system. There may be some 3-4 players that we, if we ran a 3-4 defense, that we would grade a little higher. I'm sure vice versa for those guys. So I think ultimately you're just truly following your board, Sal. Build it for your team. We don't grade for the league. We grade for the Buffalo Bills, how we value players, how we use players. And so I think that's where you get some differences of where players are graded. I think that's up to us. If we're, you know, it's getting close to us, you know, I've probably moved up more than I moved back. I generally do that when I'm like, man, we're running out of players here. If I don't get up and get this guy, I'm going to need to go back, because I think we would get better value by moving back into the second round, taking a player there, and then get whatever else that you can get. Last year we added a third to get Dwayne. So I think it's truly, Sal, setting your board, reading your board, and having options both ways. We constantly are talking to people ahead of us and the people behind us and waiting to see how it falls.
Given that you have the 10 picks and you're probably
them as assets. And after moving back last year, do you think you might be more apt to move up than back this year?
Which round? Round one?
Yeah.
I really don't know, John. I mean, it's sitting as late as we pick, it's so hard every year. I mean, we've done a few mocks, and, you know, it could go so many different ways of who's really there. And this year, as much as there's as many different ways it could go this year as I can remember, just what mocksters out there perceive teams' needs are to best player available. And so I don't really know. I'm going to truly, as I was answering the last question from Sal, is just read the board. And if we think there's a player we really love fits a need as well, those are when I'm trying to trade up. Player we love fits a need and the value, that makes sense. If not, and the board's getting wiped, now we're looking, what are our options to go back? How far do you want to go? I mean, there's been times before that we didn't trade back, and it was people wanted the pick. It was just, man, I'm not moving back 12 slots. You know, that's a long drop. I'm not quite comfortable with what may be there.
You see the videos on draft night, you and Sean sitting next to each other. Do you guys, does he participate in the mock drafts? And what's your process of getting a download from him on his thoughts on this process?
Yeah, so, you know, I always kind of give Sean kind of a list of targets of players to view, especially on defense, being that's the strength of, you know, what he's, you know, been coaching all his life. And then we go back through, you know, the scouts and I worked the board, and then but, you know, he was in there earlier today just kind of going through, hearing some things that the scouts would say, you know, talking about, again, what I was saying earlier, how they were used. So, you know, it's not my board. It's not the scouting board. It's the Buffalo Bills board. There are not every player is ranked exactly how I saw him. There are times I'm like, you know what? I'm the minority in the room. You know, and it's painful sometimes. You're like, man, I like that guy more, but it's like 85-15 the room, and I'm hearing him out, and I'm like, all right, better be right though. No, but no, that's it's hard because we're all competitive. We all want to be right, but we're not always right. And as I said, this is a projection business. You're weighing risk in whatever round it is, and especially when you're talking about at one and two and things like that. And so, you know, I just want to get it right for the team and for Terry Pegula and that crew. That's my job. It's not to pick the players how I rank them. It's how the consensus, how we feel, making sure I see alignment and making sure we all have the shared vision for this player and how we're going to use him here in Buffalo.
What's the strongest position in the draft?
I mean, I would say it's a pretty good D-line draft. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different flavors. And again, I was talking about the 3-4 guys. You know, some of those guys we've, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago or maybe even 10 years ago, if we would have drafted a Javon Solomon, you know, more of a 3-4 stand-up guy. But we found value in those guys. It's a passing league. You got to be able to get them down. So you're trying to make sure you can find enough value for those, and then, you know, what are they going to do on fourth down and special teams for you? But adding those players in as well, I think it's probably good on both.
Your defense, your front four, you rotate quite a bit.
Yeah.
You don't as much in the secondary. Does that impact how you value players? Meaning, you know, cornerback who's going to be on the field for 100% of the snaps maybe has a higher value than a defensive tackle who might only play 30 or 40%.
Yeah, good question. I think it's just how impactful one is versus the other. I think they're both
high position value. Like you just, and I think you can look at that by contracts in the league, what these guys are getting paid. I mean, if you've got an Aaron Donald, you know, that guy in his prime, you'd probably take over most corners, okay, even though he doesn't play every snap. And that's a very fair point. But you got a guy who can play man, can play zone, has speed, tackle, and turns the ball over. That could be more valuable than a lot of defensive tackles, especially, you know, a two-down player who's, you know, more of a run player than a pass rusher. So I think you would truly have to discuss player versus player, where's the most value. If you can, you know, we had Josh Norman in Carolina. You know, even Tre'Davious here when he was rolling and we paid him as the number one guy, like we could match up Tre'Davious on the team. You know what I'm saying? He gave us a lot of – he would be more valuable than a number of defensive tackles. Probably not more valuable than Aaron Donald, no disrespect to him, just using those comparisons.
So when does a BPA supersede a position?
You know, you're always trying to take the best player, okay? But as you move down in the draft, to your point, to Jay's question earlier, like you don't want to start drafting players that you're like, man, I know this guy's better than this other position, or we have him rated a little bit better, but I'm not sure with what we've already added if he can make the roster. So as you go, especially by the time you get to Saturday, you're going, man, what would we like to come out of here with what we've already added today? And then you start looking at where do you have value on your board. So fourth round, if we're like, man, we really need a corner, and we're like, man, we only see two guys that we really feel good about, we probably better take one in the fourth round because he's probably not going to be there in the fifth. You know what I'm saying? Unless there's a position of higher need. I hope that makes sense.
Great. Operationally, so you say you build the board for the Bills, not the league, right? So I'm
yes.
curious. So let's say you have you don't need a franchise quarterback. But you have a guy coming
feel good
out,
with our guy?
Yeah. You have a guy coming out who would normally be you'd view him very highly. He could be a franchise guy. Does that impact then the grade you put on him in that particular draft, or do you lower him because you don't need that particular guy?
You talking about any position or?
I'm using quarterback as an example.
Quarterback, yeah.
And let's just say you have a guy that you think is truly a franchise guy coming out. Does he have a different grade when you need one versus when you don't need one? Because that could impact how the board falls for you.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't expect at 30 if a guy's there for us to take him, right. To your point. Even if we had him rated up there, that would, you know, I'm not there. If Josh's career was winding down or something, maybe you would look to do that. But there's too many other valuable players. So to your point, yes, especially at quarterback, because you can't run. You know, you hope you're only playing your one in the game. You hope the other one's holding the clipboard all game, all season. So what is the true value of that? So yes, we would lower that. I think it depends on each position, how you would do that. Some of these positions, defensive tackle that Jay's talking about, you could have, even if you have an Aaron Donald on your team, you're still looking to put somebody beside him. And then, you know, that's a position injuries can happen a lot. So and as we rotate guys, you better have the next man ready to roll. So it's kind of a different mindset for each position. Yeah, I mean, it's great to have Trey back. I mean, you just, you know how we all feel about him, and the business part of this stinks. I'm sure I mentioned that. I don't remember how I answered it a year ago when we parted ways, but I definitely know that I made it clear just because we're parting ways today doesn't mean forever. And not that I envisioned 1 year later it would work out, but no, we're excited to have him back. You know, hard to find a guy who's been here since we started this thing and had great things, unfortunately had some setbacks with injuries. But he brings great experience to our team. Felt like if you watch his film, it really improved from the start of the year with the Rams to how he played down the stretch. He's another year off of injury. So we have a lot of confidence in Trey, but no promises were made. We don't really do that a lot anyway. We're, you know, let's just roll the ball and go. But, yeah, we're pulling for him and would love nothing more. If he wins the starting job, that means we feel good with him.
Grant, you have a lot of experience with guys like Brian Gain and Terrence Gray and guys on your scouting staff. How much does that help and how much is valuable is that when the bullets start flying on draft day and you know that, you know, a couple minutes away from needing to turn the pick?
Yeah, great question, great value. Those guys they've been around me a long time. They know how I think. They know I'm impulsive, as I've told you guys, and hold me from trading up or something crazy. But it's great. They sit right to my right, as was alluded to earlier. Sean's to my left. And these guys are constantly updating. I'm having them. They're having conversations. You want to call this? This is what it is. They're sliding me notes. They're grabbing me to the side. Whatever it is, keeping me updated of people are interested in your pick or, hey, if you want to move back, I think this team or this team would be interested. This is what we're talking about. And I'm kind of surveying that. And just you're monitoring that, monitoring the board. But it's great because I don't have to – they know how I operate. We got a lot of continuity on the staff. We added Matt Bazergan a couple years ago, moved him up to our college director. This is kind of his first time through – running our meetings from a college director standpoint, running his role, and you know, he's done a great job. Gain, Terrence, it's great to have continuity there because when the bullets fly, they know how you think and feel, and they can kind of read your mind even if you're not verbalizing something.
So, Brandon, you talk about handing, like, a list of targets to Sean, right? Like, hey, these are guys that you should have on your radar. How often do you get the players that you're targeting? Do players often say –
It's a long list. It's not a It's not like eight players. Yeah. It's a, and the other part of that, Matt, is, you know, hey, we've ordered these guys again. I'm going to make up a position here on defense. We've ordered these safeties, and we got these three or four guys in the third round. You know, this is how we see them. This is their role. Like, this guy's a safety only. This guy could be a nickel safety, like we use Cam Lewis a little bit. This guy has played corner, but we think his best projection is safety. Like, this is how we see him. How do you see him? Like, take a look at these. We're in different orders, you know, in the scouting world. We got different viewpoints. So sometimes it's that as well. But no, it's a wider range. Not as much at the bottom of the draft. More higher in the draft, knowing that those guys, you know, you would hope to count on for a more prominent role. You'd love, you know, we love it when we get the back end guys, but, you know, that's a lot to throw on the coaches at this point.
So how often are you genuinely surprised, whether for the good reasons or for the bad reasons? Like, I can't believe that this guy is here, or how the heck did that player already go?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, I mean, every year there's guys that go in the first, and you're like, man, I didn't see that. People probably say that about people we've picked. And then same thing. You know, there's players that have fallen to us, and you're like, heck yeah, I would have lost that bet an hour ago the way things were falling that, you know, because sometimes there's a run on positions. Or, you know, again, everybody values players differently for their team. And, again, we know – you know, needs at some point are going to come into play with how teams select, especially if, you know, the first round they went corner. Well, if they're getting close to you and you're looking at a corner in the second, you're probably not worried about them double dipping at that spot.
Brandon, how does the everybody eats philosophy that was so successful impact the value you're willing to invest in the wide receiver?
Oh, I mean, I think that was a good motto, a good team concept for us last year. But, you know,
make no mistake, like any time you can add – like we're not going to like not add someone to the – you know, if we think there's a player in any round at receiver, tight end, runner, like whatever position you're – you know, because the everybody eats was really everybody on offense. So wherever that is, you're probably talking receiver. Yeah, I mean, if we see a player that we think would add value to our group – in any round, we would add them.
How much the one technique, the defensive tackle, how important is the third down component to their skill set, and like how high you would take that?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You have that saying, like you still got to get to third down, and but yeah, if it's truly, you know, you go from, is it just strictly a two down player? Is it a 2.5 down player? Like, the guy's not a throwaway on third down. Maybe he's not full of moves, but he's got enough to at least condense the pocket. Can, you know, we think this guy could get us 2 to 3 sacks a year. You know, he's not going to end up with zero. So I think each one of those has, and the more dominant they are as a run player, the more value. If, you know, if they're a solid run player with none, you know, you're going to kind of, if this guy is like, everyone in the stadium knows when he's out there, you're not running on him. Like that would be valuable, because that's going to help us get to third down. Probably not as valuable as a guy who can get you a good number of sacks inside, to your point. And again, going back to how contracts, the guys that are getting paid big money, are the ones that can win when they get their one-on-one rush opportunities. And the second part of that is get the quarterback down. I mean, more and more quarterbacks like ours are mobile. There's not as many statues. So it's made it harder for some of these D linemen that maybe are good rushers, but then they get to the top of the rush and they don't change direction well. And so these more mobile, you know, a stiffer quarterback that's just going to sit in the pocket and throw it, you don't really have to worry about that. But we're seeing more and more as our game, there's more mobility with the QBs. And so, you know, you almost have a two-part to that rusher. Can he beat the, let's just say, can he beat the guard or the center? And then secondly, once he wins, can he get that quarterback down, especially the mobile guys?
During the 6-game suspensions to Hoyt and Ogunjobi impact how you prepare for this week?
For this week, no, we're just gonna, because those guys will be with us all of training camp, and so no, and the off season program, etc. You know, we're still gonna build the team the way we would build it, and as I said earlier, you know, you kind of look at it like you got a couple guys that are nicked up, you know, those first 6 games.
Brandon, you talked about when you talk about projections. At the corner position, how big is the – I play a lot of zone, play a lot of man in terms of projecting what you would want. Is it more about what they've done or what you see in the traits of the player physically and what you hear from the coaches about what they can do?
Yeah, it's all that, Mike. It's you definitely want to grade what you've seen them do. You want to look at that and – evaluate it. If they've only played man, at least evaluate it and know what that is. And then you try and dig into the school. Like, did he only play man because he's not grading off, not instinctive, doesn't have the, you know, whatever skills you're looking for. But it's, you're grading the player and then you're trying to find out. And then that's part of our process. Like, you know, you do need intelligence back there, and so if you're going to play zone coverage, you've got to have instincts, understand what's coming, and so you're trying to dig in why the school didn't play him that way. It may not be the player's fault. It may be that's just the way that defense, that coach wants to play, and you get around the kid. And sometimes that's where we'll do a private. We'll go out there, send the coach out there, and get on the board with them, give them some things, and watch their movement, how you would play them. It's still projecting, you know, but that's part of it. Part of what we do with the coaches is get them on the board, have Zooms with them, get them on the grass if we're working them out, doing a walkthrough with them, whatever it is, and try and answer some of those questions. How do they learn? I mean, sometimes you're going, all right, if we draft this player, you know, can he learn by just watching film? Is it by drawing it on the board? Is it by going out there and walking through it? So you're trying to figure out, oh, he can't learn well here, but if I can walk through it with him, he'll get it. He'll be fine. And I do think he can play man and zone for us. Still a projection, but that's kind of how our process works.
How beneficial is those Zoom calls? How beneficial is
it? It's very. I mean, some of it is just you start out with, do they communicate with you well through setting them up? And what is that like? Are they on time? Do they got a pad and pencil ready? Are they just, you know, we've had them before where, you know, guys in his car driving down the road and like, come on, dude, like pull, you know, the coach is like, can you pull over and let's talk through this. But most of them, you find out they're very professional. And again, it's learning what football foundation they come in with. And then teaching them stuff and seeing how quickly they can kind of pick it up to how fast you would be able to move with them. Is this player going to be fine in the room? I can teach him when I teach the vets. Or is this player going to need a lot of one-on-one year one to kind of build their football foundation?
For position players, how do you evaluate the special teams component? And does it slide based on the grade?
Yeah.
How do you put that into the cage?
It's probably a good way you put it in the sense of, unless you're taking a guy high that's an elite returner, you're like, yeah, I'm also getting a returner here. But if you're talking about, you know, covering kicks and gunners and things like that, as you move back in the round, you start talking, how do we get this guy a jersey, you know, to get him on the field? He's a linebacker, but he's not going to get in front of our, you know, our front guys. So is he going to be good enough on special teams to get a jersey, or is he going to be inactive, assuming we're healthy? So those conversations we're having now, and then, you know, based on what we've selected in front of them, you know, but that definitely, especially as you get into Saturday's picks, round 4 through 7, you're, you know, unless you're talking about a quarterback, you're talking about or a defensive tackle. But if you're talking about a skill position player, you're definitely talking about what is their fourth down value.
What happens when there's a guy who didn't play special teams, but he fits that bill, whether it be he's a safety, linebacker, you know, whatever?
Yep.
He's got those. How do you?
Great question. We've got new special teams guys. I think they've done a great job of going through and finding those guys that, to your point, linebacker, never played it, but you hope maybe as a freshman they did, but if not, you're looking at how they are in, like, speed and space. That's what a lot of special teams is, change of directions, straight line speed, all that stuff, using their hands, getting off blocks, like the things that they have to do at their position, what translates and what is their body type, how would we use them? And we've been having those conversations with those guys as well.
To Tim's point, does it change this year based on the kick return rules? Because you're going to have to cover more kicks now.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely talking about, you know, how that'll affect, and you know, there's definitely going to be an increase in kick returns, which is probably going to be less punt returns. But you still got to prepare for both. You know, because it's, again, it's a new year of a new thing, so we'll have more knowledge. You know, we believe we know somewhat how it'll go, but probably tell you a lot more after, you know, X number of games or, you know, after the season.
Right, in an ideal world, as you look at your roster as it's set right now, do you think you have more needs to address on defense as you look and project?
Probably, yeah, probably so. You know, we're always looking for depth, though, John. So it's important for us not to pass up players that we're like, man, we look a year from now, let's just say we have a player on last year of his deal,
And, you know, that's where you're weighing in this seat now versus the, let's see, if you draft a player outside the first round, that you get them on a four-year deal. And just because they're not going to have a major role, you know, look at Terrell Bernard. We draft him, barely plays year one, but steps in year two as a starter and so on. So that's the balance you're doing, trying not to overdo for now and forgetting about the future. You're balancing special teams and all that. And the other part of that is you can – you know, you start looking, well, you got more needs on this side of the ball, and you leave some good players on the board. You have some injuries, and you're going, dang, if I had known that, I would have taken this offensive guard, whatever, you know, you name the position. But we went for need. So it is hard because you want to make sure you're drafting good players. You always want to fill needs, and that's where we try and move up and down the board to answer needs with value. But not in the sake of passing over, you know, a player that's clearly better.
Hey, Brent, what's your theory on everybody still having their first round pick?
I know. I don't think I knew that till recently. That's an interesting one. I don't know if I have a theory. I haven't spent a lot of time on it. I don't really have a great answer for you. I think more people are open to trades. People see it. And again, I don't know what'll happen. I don't have a great, you know, people are saying, well, people aren't going to trade up this year. Well, that means there's not going to be trades because if they're not trading up, then nobody's trading back. But, you know, people also get on the clock or they're getting close to their pick and they're like, man, I really like this player. We're three picks away or we're five picks away. I'd like to get him and not take a chance on losing him. Maybe at the start of the day they didn't think he would be there or whatever, or they were just kind of like, yeah, we'll take our pick or we'll move back. But I think there's still going to be plenty of action through the weekend. I just think enough people are going to want to target certain positions, certain players in certain rounds. And again, it's so hard to predict. Where do the quarterbacks go? How many go in one? What position players does that push down? All of that can affect, you know, how many trades there are on Thursday night.
How important is having more speed on the back end?
You take speed everywhere on the field, Mookie. I mean, that's I'd be lying if you said you always want speed. But I'll also say you got to make sure it's a football player. And whatever position it is. And so on the back end of the defense, you got to make sure he's got instincts, can tackle, you know, can see the field and all that stuff. But, yeah, if he's got enough of those characteristics and traits and he's got speed too, you'd sign up for that all day long.
Brandon, what do you think about some of the former people you know playing in football, like Ron Rivera becoming general managers in college, Andrew Luck?
Yeah. No, it's I mean, the NIL world has really changed everything. And, you know, I've over the last year and a half, have spoken to several athletic directors just asking about people in the league and how we do cap stuff. And, you know, I've spoken to a couple of guys who are in these GM positions of position values and where we allot our money and just kind of going through. Theirs is going to be a little different, and they're still working through. They obviously don't have a CBA and things like that, but I mean, it's been talked about with all the transferring multiple times and NIL, we're getting different athletes, which is coming up in our conversations on the background. We're getting professionals, you know, in a lot of ways. I know other sports, hockey, baseball, NBA, you know, those guys are allowed to turn pro out of high school. Our league is not. But in some ways, college football has turned into a paid minor league, you know, for the NFL or other football leagues.
Cause like a bit of a paradigm shift in how you have to view things compared to maybe 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Because these guys are already getting paid, how they've managed their money, what they've done.
Yes, 100%. It's all those. Are they playing, you know, are they transactional? They love the game. Are they, you know, is it all about the money? You know, you're always trying to dig into those. You always have, but you are getting the question, how's this player going to be with money? Or a lot of these guys, because they've had it. And has it hurt them? You know, has it helped them? Or is this, they're fine with the money. Of course, who's going to turn it down? But nothing's changed about their DNA. They're still a great person. They love ball, and you don't have to worry about them. Yeah, I think he definitely can compete for a starting job. I think that's why he came back here. Trey is one competitive dude. And as I said, John, you know, I thought his play trended up last year and you know, fortunate, like so happy for him that he was able to, you know, get through a healthy season and trend up. And he knows our defense. You know, I think if he had never played in this defense, if he had been somewhere else and we were signing him, I might be a little more skeptical. But there's so much value. I mean, we signed Peanut Tillman the year we went to the Super Bowl in Carolina, who was – Peanut was probably 33, 34. I don't remember. His best years were past him, but so smart. Picked up the defense right away, had not been in ours. And we were curious, would he have enough movement skills – with all of his mental aptitude that he's so smart. And, you know, you want guys like that on the field because they can overcome wherever they are athletically in their career. They can overcome that with smarts, instincts, feel, communication, knowing what's coming. So Trey's going to have a lot of value from that standpoint. Like I said, he's going to compete his butt off and, you know, how can you not root for him? Yeah, I mean, those guys have started a lot of games, big-time games for us, playoff games. We've won a lot of games with those guys. Trey definitely in starter roles. Dane's been in both roles for us. I could go here for another hour on Trey White and Dane Jackson. Like, those guys are Bill's blue DNA. It's guys like that that help you win. It takes all sorts of ingredients to create a winning culture, a winning team, and you can't get enough guys like that. So it's great to have those guys back in the mix, and I'm sure Dane's going to be competing, you know, for that starting role as well. He started a lot in this league. He got banged up in Carolina last year. New place didn't go as well, but I'm sure he's looking for a clean reset here as well. I wouldn't put anything past Trey. I don't think that's where we're at. But Trey is very smart, very football smart, instinctive. And so I would not put that past him. But we're not looking at that.
Hey, Brandon, I know Dwayne Carter did that both positions last year, but he was more so room at three. Is that your vision for him moving forward? Or do you think he can be a better fit
one? I think that's a great question. I think we do like his versatility. I think that was part of the attraction to him, Joe, and I thought he was showing that well. Last year was the year of the wrist for us, and, you know, I thought he played a couple of his best games right before that happened, and then we brought in the reinforcements with Jordan and Q Jeff. So he didn't really get back on track. Not all of his fault, really. It was limited opportunities. But I do think that's one of those when a guy can play multiple spots like that for you. You look at your makeup once you build you finish out the build of the team. We'll know a lot more after this coming weekend of what we add. And so let's look at all the ingredients. Who can only play one spot? Who can play multiple spots? And then figure out, hey, you know what? And I'm just making this up. If you add another three tech, maybe you say, hey, Dwayne, we're going to major as a one, but don't lose the three because injuries do happen.